May it please the court.
It does. Go ahead.
Okay. The U.S. Supreme Court has stated that the ability to pay is the critical factor in support cases. Now, I want to make it clear that I'm not here today to say that I shouldn't pay child support. I'm not here to tell you that unemployment is an excuse not to support your children. I'm a father. I'm a good father, and I love my children, and they're here, two of them are here with me today, as well as my family. And I want to provide what's best for my children, the best for my children. So I'm not here to ask you to forgive me. What I'm
because
here to do...
That issue isn't before the court. Wasn't that part of another appeal, that there's a final decision out of the Court of Appeals?
Well, we're here on, because the trial court asserted jurisdiction, while I was appealing the imputation of over $163,000.
The only issue before the court is the judgment against you for attorney's fees.
Not necessarily.
Well, I know you try to raise more, but isn't the court didn't take transfer of the decision of the Court of Appeals. So that's a final determination of your orders of support.
The $7,500 to $7,500 in attorney's fees is based on the finding that I had some arrearage in connection with the underlying lawsuit. So without the underlying lawsuit, $7,500 in attorney's fees doesn't exist. If that judgment is void, then the separate judgment for $7,500 is also void.
But how could we hold it void? It's final, and for purposes of appeal, it would be collateral estoppel, wouldn't it?
No. A void judgment is always...
Why would your underlying...
Because you're
arguing the attorney fee judgment is void.
I'm arguing that the underlying judgment upon which the judgment for attorney's fees is void. The underlying judgment is void because it's not based on actual income. It's based on $163,000 that I never earned.
That was an issue on appeal in your case before the Court of Appeals, is that correct?
Yes.
And you lost on that?
Yes.
And we denied transfer?
Yes.
I don't see a point relied on dealing with a judgment's void if it's not supported by facts in the case. That's not really one of the issues in this case, is it?
Well, now, the U.S. Supreme Court has said that if you don't consider ability to pay when you set an obligation for child support, then you have violated the due process provisions of the U.S. Constitution. And my position is that you've also violated the Missouri.
But to go beyond our denial of transfer on the case in chief, you would have had to ask for cert if you're relying on the United States Supreme Court, certiorari from the United States Supreme Court. To reverse our decision to deny transfer, you'd have to get the Supreme Court of the United States to do that.
Not necessarily. Any judgment that's void can be attacked at any time. And I'm before you now.
Counsel, if something violates due process, I see no authority in here suggesting something's void if it violates due process.
If it violates
it's wrong. That's different than being void.
If it violates due process, it's unconstitutional.
Uh-huh.
And the rules and the cases that I cite say if it's unconstitutional, that judgment is void.
But you raise it at the trial court, then you raise it to the Court of Appeals, and you didn't prevail.
Well, now, and then let's talk about it in terms of this. For the trial court to have imposed or entered a judgment for $7,500 in attorney's fees, he has to find that I failed to make a payment without good cause. That's the underlying judgment, that I failed to make a payment without good cause. If he set that obligation without regard to my actual income when the payment is due, it all flows from there. You can't impute, if you impute $163,000 to me, and then after that, because it was impossible for me to pay because I never earned that money, and then because I appealed that, then enter another judgment against me for $7,500. That severely hampers my ability to provide for my children and myself.
Would it be your argument, though, that any case where you raise a constitutional issue is never final because you can always keep raising the argument in later cases that the constitutional issue was wrongly decided?
Well, that raises one of my points. Not one court, not the trial court, not the appellate court, and because you declined to accept it, not one court has ever addressed not one constitutional argument that I've raised. There's no opinion that has ever addressed what I just said here today, which is I did not have $163,000 that the court used to calculate my support obligation, and then used that failure to make the payment based on money I never had to then impose an additional $7,500 judgment based on money that I never had. Not one court has ever addressed the constitutional implications of the imputation of $163,000. The court used the income, that income level that I had in 2010 after getting a job, and used it to calculate my support obligation through 2 years of unemployment and 1 year.
You raised those issues at trial, did you not?
Yes, I did.
And so the court, by deciding as it did, addressed your issues?
No, it did not address the issues.
They don't have to write about it when they make a decision to address. If you raise issues, they decide not in your favor, then it decided the case.
Well, actually, the court said, and the court, and I put that language in front of you, the court said that what I earned during the 48 months, when he set the obligation for that 48-month period, what I earned was irrelevant.
Well, was the court saying, because the statute does say if you choose not to have income, then we can impute income?
No. The court said that what I earned for 48 months was irrelevant to his decision.
Had you filed a motion to modify at the time you were unemployed because you were unable to pay?
I filed the motion to modify the moment that I knew I couldn't make the next month's payment.
And whether or not the court ruled on those issues, the court denied your appeal to change the amount of child support.
Well, and actually what the trial court said is...
You lost.
Well, no, what the trial court said is, that's just not for me to decide at this point. And he actually referred it to the appellate court, or even you, and the appellate court just simply wrote a per curiam decision and didn't address any of the constitutional issues that I'm raising.
Did it address the imputation issue?
The
imputation of income?
No. The trial court, neither court addressed my actual income when the payment was due.
And whether they did or not doesn't make any difference, because that's a final decision and you cannot raise it again in a different action over attorney's fees.
Except when that action, that $7,500, is conditioned on that prior judgment.
So all you can do is challenge the $7,500 attorney's fee judgment. You don't get to re-challenge your attorney fee award. So focus on the $7,500 and tell us why you're arguing the court didn't have jurisdiction, because it was the trial court awarding that and it was on appeal. So tell us your argument on that issue.
Okay. Well, while my case was pending on appeal, the trial court asserted appellate jurisdiction, and without actually before the appellate court had actually ruled, entered another judgment in.
But it wasn't asserting appellate jurisdiction. It wasn't reviewing what it did. It was asserting that it had authority to award attorney's fees to cover costs on appeal in the trial court. So isn't your argument really that he had no authority while the case was on appeal, not that he was asserting appellate jurisdiction?
Well, Section 452.355 actually says that in order to assign the attorney's fees, he has to find that the non-payment of the obligation that was based on $163,000 was without good cause. Mm-hmm. You can't analyze good cause if the income at the time is irrelevant. I mean,
you're saying he decided that wrongly. Now, what evidence was there? Wasn't there evidence on the other side that you did have that income that opposing counsel put on?
No, they put on evidence of money that I had. They put on, actually, what they asked for was my income at the time of the hearing, which was in May of 2012. But no, actually, there was no, other than the evidence that was already before the court, there was no evidence concerning the, the court had actually already heard it. There was no evidence of my income at the time for the underlying judgment. Mm-hmm. Now, what it also requires is that the court, now, I guess your position is that the trial court isn't actually deciding a portion of his own appeal, but when you look at the petition, they're actually saying that my appeal was without merit. That was one of the averments. That was one of the statements.
And we have lots of cases where we remand cases to the trial court to determine whether or not fees on appeal should be granted.
Yes.
Are you saying all those cases are without authority or incorrect?
No, I'm saying that the court can't enter the judgment for attorney's fees while the case is on appeal before you rule.
And so you're saying the court retains no authority over it. Are there cases saying that's a collateral matter that the court can do? Aren't there cases in this court?
I'm sorry. After you send it back the case, yes, the court can do that if you give them that authority. But the case I cited to a case out of the Southern District where the trial court issued a mandate. I mean, issued a ruling prior to your issuance of a mandate. Prior to the Southern District issuing a mandate. And while the trial court would have had permission to do that after the mandate, because it did it before the mandate, then it was without jurisdiction. Now,
there are a lot of cases cited in opposition to your attempt to get a writ of prohibition on this very issue in the Court of Appeals before you appealed to this court. And opposing counsel did file a brief in that case and cited a number of cases by the Court of Appeals that have said that pursuant to 452, 355, in dissolution matters, the Court of Appeals cannot award attorney's fees while the case is on appeal, but the trial court can, that the statute gives that specific authority. Well, you didn't address those cases in your brief to this court.
I did.
Can you do that now?
Oh, yes. Your decision in the Webb case clearly makes those cases bad law, because
Webb dealt with the trial court's jurisdiction, not an appellate court jurisdiction.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
That Webb dealt with trial court jurisdiction, though, not with appellate jurisdiction.
Well, it made it clear that when the courts in Missouri deal with jurisdiction, they deal with personal and also subject matter, and that is governed by the Constitution. And Article 5 says that appellate jurisdiction lies with either the appellate court or this court. It doesn't lie with the circuit or with the trial court. And 452, 355 can't take a sliver of the jurisdiction and give it to the trial court.
But because you're arguing that, whether you cited Webb or not, that the trial court loses jurisdiction over the case when it goes up on appeal.
After it has ruled on after-trial motions.
The legislature by statute can't give the trial court some of that jurisdiction
no.
back.
And I'm not sure that, yes, and I'm not sure that 452, 355 even made that attempt. 452, 355 doesn't say anything about cases on appeal.
Could the party have filed the motion for attorney's fees with the appellate court, and then the appellate court referred it back to the trial court for determination? Could that have been appropriate?
At that point, when I read the cases, the appellate court would then, because it's not in a position to judge those relevant factors, which was part of my argument, is that 452, 355 is vague because it doesn't tell you exactly what factors are relevant for purposes of entering this judgment. What is it that I have to do wrong that entitles the court or justifies the entry of an additional $7,500? What is it? How could I have avoided an additional judgment of $7,500 by not filing the appeal? But other than that, there's nothing else I did. It was the $7,500 in terms of impact on my ability to provide for my children.
Well, the motion for those fees filed by the other side said that you raised 11 points on appeal and it cost substantially more than one would normally anticipate prepare a responsive brief because there were so many issues, and therefore she wanted assistance in paying attorney's fees.
Actually, I don't have it in front of me, but I think they abandoned half of their averments, and I'm thinking that's one of them. But I filed an appeal, and each of the points was a legitimate point that went to my ability to provide these payments and how they impact my ability to provide for my children and myself.
And you're
now
saying here there was, assuming for the moment, just for this question, the trial court was not trying to exercise appellate authority, but was addressing a collateral matter, attorney's fees, that it had authority to do in the trial court. You're saying no evidence was presented to support the award of $7,500, that there was no evidence you could pay it? Or what evidence was presented below on this attorney's fee claim?
Okay. When you read the cases, one of the requirements, and the cases don't always agree, but one of the requirements is that she prove that she has that she doesn't have the ability to make her pay her own attorney's fees, and that requires additional income and expense information after the trial. She presented no information about that. I presented a monthly income and expense statement that indicated that I was running an $800 plus monthly deficit.
Because the trial court had originally denied these fees, do I recall that?
Yes, at the trial level, the court had to, and then there was no proof that since that time that there has been any substantial change in circumstances that would justify the imposition of the attorney's fees. I mean, and that goes to the merits.
Are there any more questions? I want to say you've been very courteous, and for sake of your children, I want to note, although we ask a lot of questions, it takes a lot of courage for your father to come before us and answer all the questions. So thank you.